we smile? We're in Bermuda, and we're really glad after a year of planning that we're here in this wonderful country. So, without ado, I'm Mara Delli Priscoli, and I'm sort of lead architect of this ETC 2018 conference, and I'm really pleased to be here. I basically, you know, it takes a lot of work to put together a conference. Now, this is our first conference overseas, and we really learned a lot, and I think Bermuda has learned a lot, and we're sharing a lot. So on that note, I think that we're just glad to be here. And I'm glad to see all of you. There's no snowstorms. There's no airline departures and problems. So without ado. We're just taking a moment to give thanks that we're really here. But we're on an island that's about 665 miles off the east coast of South Carolina. And I had the great fortune to be discovering this beautiful island many years ago when I was marooned here, not really marooned, but waylaid, on a sailing adventure that took me 3 years through the Caribbean. But I found out that Bermuda had a lot more that I never knew about. And I'm going to make it my passion and basically joining my Bermuda colleagues to give you that insight into Bermuda, but also to launch various programs that we're going to do in this conference. In orchestrating a conference that basically, I would say, we're in a different location for sure. You see those beautiful beaches outside. But this conference is very, very different programmatically. And I say that with sincerity. We have really ramped up this conference. We've changed the formats on every single level. We have facilitated far more interaction with colleagues, and we are including all the constituencies in many, many of the programs. We just completed Destinations Deep Dive today. And tomorrow, we're going to continue on with our Travel Planner Forum, and then we launch off into using Bermuda as a stage for some of our learning formats, and a lot of them will take place here. But with any renaissance in programming and revival or a renovation, I would say that there are a lot of people that I need to thank, and I really don't have the time. Time is short, and I'm keeping it very short because I have to warn you, there are libations right after this, and then there's a huge dinner. So just keep thinking about that so you don't. And we're going to make this short and brief because I want to get to our wonderful keynote speaker. But first, I'd like to thank our 31 sponsors. And I don't know how many of you are in the room, but I would ask if you could just stand. These are the sponsors that made this conference possible. All of the wonderful food venues, the collateral that we have, the audiovisual. And I should say that most of these sponsors have been sponsoring for years. So they're very, very committed not to have their logos up here, but to supporting the educational community. So I thank you deeply for that. And I should say that they're located on Partners Boulevard. When you walk out, we're having libations after this. When you walk out into Partners Boulevard, they'll have all those colorful displays. Why don't you just drop by and say hello? You might find it very interesting and strike up a conversation because I'm sure they'd welcome you. I also want to thank you to the on-site ETC team. To get here was a major effort, but it also was a pleasure. And basically, I think that of this team, majority of them spent the year planning this new programming. So if you have a chance to see them with the big Ask Me, they know how to be asked, and they will tell you what to do or where you need to go. But I wanted to thank them. Also, I want to thank the Bermuda Tourism Authority. They have been terrific in basically hosting our 2016 EAC meeting. The Executive Advisory Council meeting was held here in Bermuda. And we actually had to ask our Advisory Council members, do you think we can make it? Do you think people will come to Bermuda? Should we do our conference here? And we got overwhelming support. And basically, they are going to do a beautiful event this evening, which is downstairs called A Taste of Bermuda. But all the people that helped us do this learning labs and everything that we're doing, about 40 local Bermudians are going to be down there welcoming you. So if you want to get in touch with all the local culture and heritage people, they all came together here. And I know that the newspapers are carrying us, and we've had interviews today. They're very, very excited. So I think you'll enjoy the evening a lot. And it is a stand-up walk around buffet for networking, so you're not you'll have just a wonderful time. There's several bars, there's music and dancing. And I also want to thank everyone in the audience for coming, particularly those who helped us with our conference programming at the regional roundtables, because the programming that you shared and the ideas and speakers that you gave us really helped us develop this program that you see here in Bermuda. And these are our roundtables that are going to be happening next year, so just take a note of it. They'll be on the website, and we'll certainly email you. I also have a very special thanks to the ETC Executive Advisory Council. You're going to hear that EAC word. But the Executive Advisory Council and members of the Emeritus Council joined us this year, hosted by Wales Tourism, Visit Wales. And we actually sat down to look at this meeting and say, what are we going to do differently? What are we going to ramp up? What do we need to respond to in light of all of these changes in the industry and this really evolving constituency at this conference? So I would like to show you a little bit of a glimpse of what we did in Wales, because you're going to see it executed here in Bermuda.
Croeso e Cymru, welcome to Wales. We have 5 areas of outstanding natural beauty, and the ETC Advisory Council has had a chance to see almost all of them.
I'm so incredibly surprised, delighted, and completely in awe of this beautiful country and how much history and legend, and it's a magical place.
But something else that I find very interesting about Wales is that I have read with my children many different kinds of fantasy books. And when I look at the Welsh language and I recall the language that I found in those books, I'm wondering if they're not just offering Welsh in those books.
The first thing that I've been most impressed by is, I think, the love and passion that the Welsh people have for their country. There's just the youthful energy, especially in Cardiff, so much youthful energy there. And, you know, with the new devolution, it just seems like the country has a nice contemporary feel to it. It has so much to offer for such a small country.
First impressions have to be the people that we've met. Everybody has been so kind and so warm, and hospitality that you just don't see everywhere.
Today we had a great opportunity to see not only a sheep being caught, but also being sheared, which was quite a highlight. Also just all the accommodations we've been staying at, just having that really unique experience to kind of wake up in the morning and, oh my gosh, I'm staying in a castle for 2 nights, was just fantastic.
I've been to England, I've never been to Wales. Diolch yn fawr, Cymru. I especially looked forward to coming to the National Library. It's an amazing place, an enormous resource.
First time I was in Wales, and probably the last time prior to this precise time, was 43 years ago. I was surprised to see how lively was Cardiff. You have nothing to envy to any modern capital anywhere in the world. And what I like is the compactness of it, the size of it and the density, and I found it quite lively. It's a very well-kept secret.
I think the one really wonderful feature that differentiates Wales is the truly enveloping hospitality. We truly learn through the eyes of the people who are so willing to share. My most favorite, the most memorable visit this time was in St. David's. The peace with St. David's stayed with me for days after I left.
It is an astounding destination. I really had no idea until I actually came here how beautiful it is. 870 miles of coastline, every cliff, every top has a legend, has a mystery, has a story of shipwrecks and of saints. Amman Castle number 6, there are 641 castles, so I've got a long way to go. Wales is not just castles. It's not just being the royal tradition and all of that, but it's also the beauty of nature, and it's an incredible destination to behold.
Being here in Wales now for a few days and still having more to experience, I could easily see Rice alumni being here and experiencing it. There are so many opportunities, whether it's looking at the culinary and cuisine and the food and drink of the country, or the castles and the cathedrals. I think that there are so many opportunities here, because it's really opened my eyes being here, and I can only imagine the impact that it would have on our travelers.
We're getting okay from Visit Wales. This is the first time that she's in the video. We looked like we had a lot of fun, but we really worked hard. We collaborated, we had a lot of inspirational moments, and it's true, Wales gave us a setting that really just inspired creativity. So we thank Visit Wales for that. And moving forward, we came up with a conference theme, basically, bold moves, leading, not following your competition. And the conference programming team has taken note of this, and every single aspect of the conference has been according to that theme. We started with a new session called Bold Talks. We have remastered these keynotes. They're no longer an hour, where we have 20 minutes, and we have people sharing tidbits and inspirational messages that kick off our day and then lead into our intensive sessions. So I really encourage you. We're going to be on schedule this time. They're very short. They're going to be done, and they are amazing speakers. They're going to take us out of our comfort zone for sure. They certainly took us out of our comfort zone in planning this. And they're going to go beyond the affinity travel space. And basically, they're going to spark us to think out of the box and to embrace innovation with necessity and to further engage with our constituents on many, many different levels. We have all learned in the process of programming this, and I'm sure you will as you experience these wonderful guest speakers, some of the best we've ever had at a conference. And to further, they're going to talk about some of the global issues that are really impacting our travelers and why we need to be attuned to that with our own travel programs, and certainly to understand the larger world of travel. Speakers focus on defining the competitive edge of travel, and we're going to do that by asking questions, are we still the gold standard in educational travel? What are we doing to stay competitive? Where are affinity planners on the mission to commission Continuum, particularly in light of the new IRS rulings that have now singled out alumni travel programs, and whether they or not they offer education, and should they be subject to UBIT, which for those of you who are visiting our country, UBIT means unrelated business income tax. So there are a lot of issues out there, but we have a lot of great people to address them, and it's very exciting. A key factor, though, in selecting Bermuda was because we could use it as a learning stage. So we launched Learning Labs. They're totally sold out except for family, and basically we're going all over the island, and it's not just a fam trip, kind of a little tour around the island. We're actually meeting with colleagues within the community here, and we're going to places that typically the tourists don't go to, and there's a huge amount of definition on it, but I encourage you to talk to your colleagues if you couldn't get into one of the learning labs. They're really, really exciting, and I think they'll become a mainstay of our travel program. Also, essential part of that is that time is really allocated for personal reflection. Often when we travel, we just kind of go to one itinerary, go one spot, keep going and going and going, and we don't have time to reflect, and we don't have time to reflect with the people that travel with us and to journal. So these programs are going to be leading us through an experiential learning model that I worked with Bermuda College on, and I think that you'll find it quite different than anything. We also had the Seminar on Wheels, which is a traditional mainstay of our travel program, and Peter Frith in the back there with the Bermuda shorts has garnered all of his colleagues with Heritage Bermuda to give you an incredible trip, and that also is full, which is great. We also have intensives, which are no longer a one-hour program at the conference. We are taking a full morning to go a deep dive into things like innovation, risk management, so that you can walk away with real tools in your toolbox and take back. So when you signed up, they have a cap of 30 to 40 people, so we have tickets. It's a different process, but that's the only way that we could encourage really lively interaction and really get something out of a session that was meant for a small group interaction. Now, I don't want to take any much more time because I really want to get on with our program, and I know that food down there, I saw the layout, so I think we're all getting off trips and flying, and many of us, I guess, spent the day at the beach, but whatever. Get those good days in, right? Peter, I think that they might be raining tomorrow. So I wanted to kick off with our first bold speaker, which we call Bold Opportunities for Learning. And Ron McGill is here today to challenge us to make a difference in our travel programs and in our life. His passion for his work is inspired, and it reminds us of why we do what we do. His bold talk is entitled, Our Responsibility Connecting People and Places for a Better World. We were able to bring Ron, however, to this conference because Destination Canada helped support us in doing that. And there are five provincial partners here from Canada that got together under the banner of Destination Canada. And given that their mission is uniting conservation and travel, I thought it was very poignant that they would be introducing and taking a few minutes to preface Ron's talk. With that, I'd like to invite some of the representatives up. Michelle, thank you. I was like, right in the front.
Thanks, Mara. So good evening, everyone. My name is Michel Arrivière. I am with Travel Manitoba Canada. And I'm here on behalf of Destination Canada, who is this evening's sponsor. So I wanted to present to you some of our Canadian provincial partners that are here with us today. So if I could get them to just rise. So we have Desiree Gibson, who is with Travel Alberta, Katie Papadopoulos with Quebec. We have Wanda Hughes with New Brunswick Tourism, and Charlotte Yevchek with Newfoundland and Labrador Tourism. Now I'd like to introduce to you Fred Shepherd, which some of you may remember from last year. Fred is with Parks Canada, and he's going to give us some highlights on some of the new experiences that are here throughout Canada for 2018. Before Fred goes up, we're going to show a short video to inspire you to send your guests to Canada this year. Thank you.
Perfect. Find it in Canada. Awesome. Bermuda. I left Winnipeg. It was minus 30. Man. Awesome. Well, thank you. Merci, Michel. And thank you, Destination Canada, and our five provincial partners for inviting me. Good evening, ETC. How's everyone doing? Awesome. As many of you probably know, Parks Canada is the largest provider of tourism experiences in Canada. We work with our partners to ensure that tourism doesn't compromise our conservation efforts, and we recognize that those who visit our protected places really value them a lot. So working together with our Indigenous partners, more than 300 Indigenous communities across Canada, Parks Canada and Indigenous peoples are partnering in conserving, restoring, and presenting Canada's natural and cultural heritage. Parks Canada works with Indigenous partners, so our partners are front and center. Our Indigenous partners share their stories, their culture, and their traditions with visitors from all over the world. Parks Canada has been my love for the last 22 years, and we protect and present nationally significant examples of Canada's natural and cultural heritage. And we manage 47 national parks, 146 national historic sites, and 4 national marine conservation areas. We appreciate that many of you here this evening include Parks Canada experiences in your itineraries. Our 5 provincial partners have selected some of their favorite experiences for me to share with you this evening. Some places you might know well. Others are just waiting for you and your travelers to discover. So let's get to it. We love winter in Canada, and we love winter in the Rockies. Your clients have enjoyed Banff National Park, but now it's time to experience Jasper National Park in Alberta. Jasper is the largest national park in the Canadian Rockies and part of UNESCO's Canadian Rocky Mountains National Park World Heritage Site. Jasper is a winter wonderland of every kind of winter adventure. Skiing, skating, snowshoeing, stargazing, and the best part after any winter activity, 3 simple words. Miette Hot Springs, the hottest hot springs in the Canadian Rockies. In Jasper National Park, find yourself amongst millions of stars, not millions of cars. follow a ski track, not the fast track. Jasper is where you will find more than just life. You will find wildlife. Embrace winter. Go to Jasper National Park in Alberta. Parks Canada also protects ecosystems, and that's good for everyone, especially wildlife. Do your clients want to see wildlife up close and personal? Of course they do. Like really close? We'll bring them to Riding Mountain National Park in Manitoba. It's a veritable Canadian wildlife safari. Elk, moose, wolves, bears, and the largest land mammal of them all, the Plains Bison. Big, bold, beautiful bison. And there's more to explore in Riding Mountain National Park. It offers up every kind of trail adventure, hiking the Aspen Parkland, paddling and pint programs, guided fat biking adventures, Indigenous cultural programs, all year long. Winter, spring, summer, or fall, all you gotta do is call Riding Mountain in Manitoba. Parks Canada also protects marine ecosystems at the Saguenay-St. Lawrence Marine Conservation Area in La Belle Province, Quebec. Known as one of the best whale-watching sites in the world and home to 13 different species during the peak summer months. Just a short 3-hour tour from Quebec City, if you dream of seeing whales like the beluga or the blue, make sure you take your clients to SAGU, Saguenay, Quebec. You can explore by land and by sea. There's land-based whale-watching platforms, Zodiac boat tours, kayaking adventures, and for something different, try Nordic snorkeling. Dive into the refreshing waters of the Saguenay River. Now that's one Instagrammable moment that you can only get in Quebec. Isn't it time your clients captured a hashtag whalefee? On New Brunswick's Acadian Coastal Drive, Kujibikwak National Park, Kuch for short, in the Mi'kmaq language means river of long tides. And for generations, the Mi'kmaq have inhabited this area. Our Indigenous cultural interpreters invite you to take part in Mi'kmaq ceremonial dances or paddle an ocean-going voyageur canoe to learn about their shared Mi'kmaq and Canadian Acadian heritage. Through stories, through songs, through dances, through paddling, through food, it's a feast for all the senses. Hashtag include Cooch, Nouveau-Brunswick. On New Brunswick's Fundy Coastal Drive, you'll find Fundy National Park, home to the highest tides in the world and part of UNESCO's Fundy Biosphere Reserve. Here you can embrace customized programs with Parks Canada staff like the dramatic and delicious Edible Forest Coastal Walk or the fascinating Swim with the Wild Atlantic Salmon, one of our endangered species. Come immerse yourself in Fundy National Park's Conservation Learning Labs. Voted as one of the top places you need to visit in 2018 by National Geographic, Labrador is the big land. Your clients have experienced Grossmoor National Park. Now it's time to venture further down north, down on the Labrador, to the land of spirits, the Inuit homeland, Torngat Mountains National Park, Newfoundland and Labrador. Northern wilderness and Inuit culture come together in the Torngat Mountains National Park. It's Canada's first cooperatively managed national park. Inuit traditional knowledge not only guides the visitor experience, it informs the conservation efforts and science programs as well. In the land of spirits, you won't find 5-star accommodation. We've set the bar a little higher. Think 5 billion-star accommodations. Go to the Torngat Mountains National Park in Newfoundland and Labrador. We appreciate that many of you are bringing great business to Canada in 2018. If you have not personally had the opportunity to experience Canada for yourselves, then it's my pleasure, on behalf of the Canadian provincial partners, to say to you, hashtag the world needs more Canada. Come to Canada. Keep exploring. Thank you.
Ron, I'm going to make your introduction brief, because I think you'll say, just come on up. No. But Ron, I'll just say a few points, though. As Bold Talk describes, Ron's walked the talk for more than 37 years, and I need to mention this. You used to wrestle alligators on Miami Vice. Yes. Yes. Okay. Well, that was one of my favorite shows, so I was like that. But I will let you go on because I know you have some wonderful things, and the stage is yours.
Great. Thank you. Okay. Welcome. First of all, I want to say how honored I am to be asked to speak to you guys, because you know what? You guys are dream makers. You're memory makers. I can tell you, as a kid who grew up in a small apartment in New York City, the son of a Cuban immigrant, I grew up on a show called Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom. Marlon Perkins, Jim Fowler, and I'd sit there, and I had a little black and white television set that we had the little antenna that broke, so you put a coat hanger in there, and I'd watch things about these guys going through the plains of Africa, going through the Amazon, and I dreamed about what it would be like to do that, never thinking in my wildest dreams I'd be able to travel to those places. I want to tell you something, folks. This is so well named, the Educational Travel Consortium, because as someone who's been formally educated in college, I can tell you there is no greater education than travel. None. Travel is what will teach you more than any classroom will ever teach you. And I have been so blessed to do these things because, folks, you know, when I go out someplace and I look at and I try to tell kids, especially connecting kids, this is the big thing. That's what I want to show you when I talk about this stuff. We're storytellers. You're making memories. These are stories. Folks, I have never seen anybody buried in their coffin with all their money, okay? What you take with you is what you have here in your head. Those memories, those moments that are priceless, that's what you need to have. You need to be able to come back and tell those stories. So I'm going to go through real quick. Oh, I forgot to press this button because I'm supposed to say, oh, yeah. Okay, I got to go through real quickly because I know this is really, well, okay. So we're gonna go through the stories. And I want to just tell you, like, a story. This is a story from one night that I had in Botswana, okay? And on that night, is this working? Yes, it is. There we go. On that night, you know, it was an afternoon, and we got to see wild dogs. And anybody who's been to Africa or wants to go to Africa, you know, that's one of the things you want to see is wild dogs. Oh, my gosh, I saw wild dogs. I'm so happy they're there. Oh, my God, I saw them all going next to each other and they're doing that whole social structure thing and they're cavorting with each other. I'm thinking, this is going to be magic. I can't believe I'm getting these shots of wild dogs. And then you know what happens? This impala jumps out of the brush, and the wild dogs are like, wah, 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 and they're going after the impala. Like, oh, my God, we're going to watch this hunt now. So I'm following. I'm the only person there in the car. We're chasing after this guy, and we're watching the dogs. They look like they have Superman capes behind them. They're flying through the thing. It's fantastic to watch this. And you're watching the hunt, and you're thinking, gosh, are they going to be successful? They're going to be successful. You know, dogs are one of the most successful carnivores of all in Africa. And sure enough, right in front of me, they make the kill. As the sun is setting, I'm going, oh, my God, I've dreamed of going to heaven here. This is amazing. These dogs have made a kill in front of me. I'm getting these shots, and it's this magical feeling that you have as a kid. All this stuff you saw on television, little black and white screen is coming to life. So I'm watching this, and I'm thinking, I could die and go to heaven right now. This is amazing. It can't get any better than this. And they're watching, and they're eating, and all of a sudden they look up, and they go, huh? And I look over my shoulder. It's a hyena. A hyena's coming. I'm going, oh, my God, now a hyena's coming here. This is fantastic. How could it get any better than this? The hyena comes up, but there's only one hyena. So he sits still. He says, no, I'm not going to challenge all these dogs. So he sits there. So I'm thinking, the dogs go back at it. And they're eating. And, you know, if you ever watch dogs hunt, they make these noises. It's like these incredible sounds that they make. And then all of a sudden, these dogs are eating away. And then the dog looks up again. And I say, what the heck is that? I look over my shoulder. It's a lion. This lion is on the other side of the water. And I'm thinking, okay, there's water there, but this is the Okavango. This is Botswana. Lions love water in Botswana. Is it going to come across the water? Yes, it is. So I position myself right behind the kill, and it's coming right at me. And these dogs are eating. I'm going, oh, my God. I'm stepping my picture. I'm thinking, oh, these are going to be blurry because I'm shaking so much. I'm so excited. Look at that. The reflection comes right at me, blows right by me in the water, comes up and steals the prey. The dogs run away. We're not going to face the lion. I'm thinking, this is a National Geographic special happening in front of me right here. I'm taking all these pictures. It doesn't get any better. The lioness comes. The dog's really ticked off. The lioness takes the meat, starts eating the meat. I'm going, oh, my God, please shoot me now. This can't get any better. Put a fork in me. I am done. And all of a sudden, the lion's eating. Then the lion looks up. He goes, huh? I go, are you kidding me? I look over my shoulder. It's a freaking leopard out there. It comes out of the bush. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, this is all happening like in an hour. So it comes in there and starts eating this. And I'm watching, I'm photographing. I'm thinking, this is, I can't believe this is happening. Leopard goes around, starts going and smells it. Goes, oh, yeah, smells real good. Oh, yeah. But it's only one leopard, big lion. So the leopard sits down and says, no, I'm not going to do anything. I'm just trying to get my breath. The sun is setting now. The sun is setting, right? And then all of a sudden, I hear, the rest of the hyena clan comes in at night, and they come and they challenge the lion. And all you hear is, and the lion runs away. The hyena take it. It's fantastic. I'm thinking, this is all happening here in a matter of a couple of hours. And I'm sitting there, there's nothing else that can happen here. I'm so exhausted. I can't believe this has all happened. So then I'm looking at the hyena, I'm going, what the heck is going on with these hyena? We've already seen the leopard. We've seen the lion. We've seen the hyenas. There's nothing else. What could it be? A flipping crocodile comes out of the water. And it takes the food right out of the thing. It takes that water. It goes back in. The hyenas are challenging the crocodile. The crocodile finishes the rest of the food. Goes in the water. The greatest single night I've ever had. And I've been to Africa 51 times. But these are the things
these are the dreams you guys make come true. You know why? Because there's no book, there's no video, there's no documentary that will substitute looking at that in real life. It'll rock your world. You couldn't pay me all the money in the world to take away those memories because they're priceless. That's what you guys do. You create these memories. You make dreams come true for people. That's why it's so important. So, having said that, let's move on. We have to be very careful. No. We have to be very careful that we don't do too much of a good thing. We have to have a responsibility here. Ecotourism has become this catchphrase, but it can become overly done, you know. Here we see a classic one vehicle out there getting some incredible shots, being one-to-one with nature. But tourists, folks, and please don't take this the wrong way. I don't mean to be offensive, but some of them are just really stupid, okay? People who go out and they're in Africa or any of these natural, and they look at animals, wild animals, and for some reason they think they're pets. So you have a tourist here that's doing a good job. They're keeping their distance. They're taking some shots. They're still having an incredible experience. And then you have guys like this right here. What is he thinking, okay? Sticking his arm out with a vehicle and doing these types of things. The problem now in the Maasai Mara, for instance, you can go to the Maasai Mara and you'll see three lions fast asleep on their back. And you'll see 15 vans circling these lions. Guys, we can't let that happen. We have to make our clients, not our clients, I'm your client, but we need to educate people to make them understand that you don't try to tip these drivers to get in there and over-exploit that stuff. We have to protect these animals. We have to maintain those wild areas. We cannot overuse them just for money. So we got to be very careful. That's why sometimes a higher-end gig is a little better because it maintains that privacy. It maintains the ethics that we need to have. Things are changing a lot throughout Africa. We have to do things for conservation, folks. You know this, you see the signs whenever you go to Africa or any of these places says, take only photographs, leave only footprints. That needs to be amended. We need to leave more than footprints. We need to leave funding. We need to leave support. We need to help these education efforts. I fell in love with cheetahs when I was a little kid. Okay. Oh, this is on a timer. Stop it. It's not a timer. Why is it on a timer? Stop it. It shouldn't be on a timer. We did this. It's on a timer. Okay. Oh, my God. Freaked me out. That she's rushing me. That's what she's trying to do. Get out of here. We got to. Oh, no, stop. What happened here? Okay, it's going on a timer. Oh, yeah, because we got to stop the timer anyway. So, oh, geez, now I'm all over. Okay, so I fell in love with cheetahs. I said, we have to do something with cheetahs here. I was bringing groups down in there. I met with people, I was working the conservation programs out there. So what did I do? I said, we're going to raise money for cheetahs. We got to go down there. And folks, the people who can afford to take these trips are people who want to make a difference. You don't want to just go down there and have a trip where you're saying, oh, we're taking pictures, talk about it. Get them connected with these conservationists. These people are working day to day, dollar to dollar, just trying to make ends meet to make the important things that are going to save this wildlife so you guys can send clients there for generations to come. That's the important thing we want to do. I started with the Cheetah Project, started raising money, working with the Cheetah Project, going on those things. Okay, now I've got it on this, and it's not working. I love technical difficulties. Okay, can you make it go forward? You're taking it off the timer thing there? Okay, take it off the timer. Okay, so in the meantime, one of the greatest programs that I came across is the Anatolian Dog Shepherd Program out there. It's a guarding dog program where they actually raise dogs. See, cheetahs get a bad rap. Cheetahs are diurnal cats. So what happens is, in South Africa, for instance, you go on a farm in South Africa, the farmer sees a cheetah walk across his farm during the daytime, and then the next morning he sees a couple of dead calves, and what does he think? It was that darn cheetah that got him. No, it wasn't the cheetah. We're trying to educate them, showing us things like hyenas, jackals, caracals, so many other animals. It's not the cheetah. But they don't believe it. They've been shooting cheetahs for generations, so they keep on shooting them. So what we do is we show them, no, look, let's get a dog, because cheetahs are chickens. I've seen cheetahs chased away by vultures, okay? So cheetahs are chickens, so I get them to do the dog program. Okay, are we back onto this thing now, or are we still working on that? Try it. Yes, okay. So I bring them down all kinds of supplies. I bring supplies every time I go there. Folks, this is where you can help so much. You're the travel agents. You have connections with airlines, with travel groups. When your clients go down there, they can bring supplies. This is an endoscope thing I brought down to help with the surgery with cheetahs, trying different types of programs. I brought my veterinarian down there where we led a group, and we had the veterinarians, and they work with the veterinarians, working with cheetahs, learning about scoping these animals, doing all kinds of things. These are the connections you need to make. These are the connections. So they know they're not just going down there to talk about a trip. They're going down there to make a difference, to make that investment in the future. These are the dogs, Anatolian shepherds. They were raised, actually, to fight off bears, okay, in Russia. Oh, this back on the timer again. This is killing me. Okay, little puppies, go through. This is okay, so little puppies. And we raise these puppies. I don't know why it's on the timer. When we tested it out, it wasn't timing. What's going on? You're killing me. Oh, God, okay. So we got the puppies there. And he's giving the puppies out. And look how we get the puppies used to the livestock. See, we blend them in with the livestock, and they get used to it. And then they're raised and introduced to the herd. And they protect the herd. If you ever see one of these dogs, when they bark, it's, the cheetah's like, oh, heck no, I'm running away from that. They don't challenge that. It protects the dog. They have cut down. Oh, you've got to stop this. You're killing me. Did it stop? Okay. So what we did was, we protected the dog. We provide the dogs. We sponsor the dogs. And when I bring people, when I'm leading a group over there, they all sponsor a dog. For $500, they can sponsor a dog for a whole year. That sponsors a dog, an entire ranch, and it protects the cheetahs. So you're not just visiting. You're investing. You're protecting the wildlife. That's what's so important. And I go down, and I bring checks all the time. People add up. These are the things we have to do. It'll give you credibility. It'll give you credibility to say you're not just a business. You're an investor in what your business is in, because that's what this is as far as that goes. Okay, now this is not working. Oh, God, this is beautiful. Hello. Kind of had to be on that ugly picture, too. Okay, all right, so then I met this lady. She's wonderful. She's got the Mara Cheetah Program. Oh, please, you're killing me. She's got the Mara Cheetah Program. And what we did was they said, we need cameras. We need GPS cameras. Because when you have all the rangers and the guides go out, they want to take pictures of the cheetahs that they see with the GPS camera. Oh, you're killing me. The GPS camera going in, is there any way to stop that? I mean, okay. Okay, well, yeah, you see it. So anyway, we got the cameras down there. I'm a Nikon ambassador. I got Nikon to donate all the cameras, and we got them down there to donate the cameras. And now there are cameras all over the Masai Mara, donated by Nikon, delivered by one of your members here who helped deliver them for me. These are the types of things we've got to do. So we're saving cheetahs. We're not just going down there and photographing. We're investing in saving them. It's so important. Okay, now we'll see if this goes again. No, of course not. Ah, what the heck? Hello? Oh, that was not even my picture. Oh, stop it, stop it, stop it. Please stop it. Oh, God, please. Okay, you want to just do it manually? Can you just do it manually? All right, that's going to be a mess, but anyway. The other thing that's really important, folks, is a lot of times we look at this type of travel as just adult travel. Folks, we can get kids involved in this. Investing in our kids is the greatest investment that we have. These are my kids. This is my daughter. She was 8 years old there when I bought her. Her brother was 11. What? Brought. Yeah, that. Okay, that. So anyway, and you know what it teaches them? No cell phones, no electronic games, no computer, no nothing. She gets to meet people, gets to know about different cultures. She started learning games I didn't even know about that she was beating them at after a while. Next slide. She gets to meet people that care about her, that she cares about. She learns about the culture. This is the greatest education my kids ever had. They're honor students in school, but this is an education, learning about other people. Next slide. Look at her. Her and her brother hugging each other. That didn't happen for the previous 11 years of their life, okay? So they're out there. They're bonding. They're having a good time. Look, next slide. They started dancing with the natives, holding hands. Their mother and I were like, oh, my God, is this for real? Look at this. Look, these kids have changed because they went to another place. They learned different cultures. Next slide. Meeting the kids, realizing, putting things in perspective, what they need to do. Folks, these are the windows you give to people. You can change people's lives with this. Next slide. I'll never forget when we got back, the first trip that I took. I've taken him to Africa several times now. The first trip we got back, I remember my dad. My son gets off at the airport. He goes, Dad, you know something I'll never take for granted again? I go, what? And he goes to a water fountain and drinks out of it. He realized the value of water. Little things like that you learn. When they wake up early in the morning and kids are walking, at like 4:30 in the morning, they're working in the dark, in the middle of the bush, little kids, no shoes. My dad, my kids go, where are they going to? I go, they're going to school. What? They're going to school. And they're the lucky ones because not everybody in the village gets to go to school. They understand the value of school. Next slide. Okay. Now, this is another responsibility we have. Too many places we go to, we'll see animals being exploited for money. You've got to be able to change the mentality of your clients doing that. Kids, that's not the message you want to give. Okay, next slide. He'll go up there, and he's got this cobra, and he does the thing, and he brings out the mongoose, and he's looking for tips, and people are giving him tips. And as long as people are giving him tips, that's going to keep on going. We cannot keep on going. Next slide. You know, and then he tries to scare you up because you're not giving him a tip. And, oh, geez, Louise, you can't do that. Next slide. Here's a great example. These bears. the Dancing Bears of India. When I first went there, I saw these bears in the street. The calendar people were making them dance for money. Next slide. And they make them there. Keep on going. Next slide. And it was awful because they'd brand the rope right through their nose to make them dance for money. It was the most awful thing you could ever see. But the calendar people were not bad people. That's the only thing they knew. I was down there. I met a guy named Kartik who opened up this wonderful wildlife SOS, and I got to meet him. Keep on going. And we worked with the bears. He started taking them off the streets. They never thought they'd be able to do it, and he did it. He got with the calendar people. He offered them a different way. Oh, slow it down. What's going on? You're killing me. Okay, nobody believed he could do it. But one by one, he took every single bear off the streets. And you know what? About 5 years ago, the last dancing bear in India was taken off the streets because people understood what was going on. It was a message. It was educating. It was telling people, do not pay these people to make them dance. But at the same time, folks, we've got to offer them an alternative. You can't go to somebody's house. I tell this to people all the time. I've dedicated my entire life to conservation. But if I'm with my wife and my kids in the middle of the African bush and the last rhino in the world is in front of me and she's pregnant with the future of the whole species and my kids and my wife are starving and the only way I know to feed them is to kill the rhino dies. Okay? And anybody who thinks otherwise with their own kids and family, you're kidding yourselves. You've got to understand. You've got to give them an option. That's what we have to do. We have to give them an option so they can make money. Keep on going. Kartik has done an incredible job. He saved countless bears. Keep on going. Bears that are ripped away from their mothers, they're killed because then they get them as cubs and they brand them and they make them dance. Next slide. These are the people who are doing all the work. I got to meet them out there. And I've given them tens of thousands of dollars through people I've met here in the States to help them keep on going. And now the bears are free in the sanctuary. They can't really release them back in the wild because they rip their canines and stuff out. But they're living freely and happily. Keep on going. And you have these moments, okay? Kartik is one of the most amazing men, next slide, that I've ever seen. He's just such a pleasure. And that's what I learned from travel. When you open your eyes, you present them with these things. Don't keep giving them the stock stuff. Show them behind the scenes. Show them the struggles that are going. Your clients are smart people, generally speaking. Most of them usually have the financial wherewithal to help make a difference. You just have to present it to them the right way and include them. Don't have them just write a check. Have them go to the facility. Make that part of your tour so they see what's going on. Next slide. This is the greatest thing ever for you guys, okay? I always said to myself, gosh, kids, how do we get kids to go? I came up with a concept years ago where I said, eco hero. We could reward kids for doing good things for the environment, right? So I have a contest in Florida where any kid in high school who's done something positive for the environment, actually middle school and high school, gets nominated to be the eco hero. The kid who wins, I take to some incredible destination in the world. I go with a network news affiliate crew and we do a documentary through their eyes. This is the Galapagos the first time. Go ahead, next slide. This is the young lady who won. She had never been on a plane in her life from Miami. She gets to go to the Galapagos Islands. We do a documentary. Next slide. You know what it was like for this girl to experience this stuff in real life? To see the documentary. Next slide. See these animals. Next slide. Next slide. Next slide. Go snorkeling in the Galapagos. This little girl who'd never been on a plane. Now she's snorkeling. Next slide. This is what she's seeing under the water in the Galapagos. Next slide. It's a magic, magic moment for this kid. It changed her life. She is now going to Cornell University because she was so inspired at what's going on there. Next slide. She couldn't afford it, but she became the hostess of this program, see? And it's a win-win for everybody. We got the Galapagos to donate some accommodations. We got the travel agent to arrange everything. We got the news team to do all the documentary for free. Then you have a documentary that's played to hundreds of thousands of people, and the Galapagos is getting free advertising. The girl's getting this great exposure. She's inspired. This is how you change lives. Next slide. Did the same thing with this young man. Go ahead, next slide. We brought him to Panama. He gets to, and I got him hooked up with the indigenous Indian that I work with there. Keep on going. Diving in the middle of the rainforest. Keep on going. Going through this place on the Panama Canal. He's out there and doing a documentary. He's the host. You're empowering this kid. You're empowering to make a difference, to come back and tell his peers, you can make a difference. You need to go here and see what we need to work on and save. These kids are the future. We say it as a cliche, but it's the truth. Next slide. Goes on the top, this beautiful thing, go on the canopy of the rainforest. Next slide. Diving in the middle of the rainforest. Go, next slide. Dancing with the indigenous people. This is great stuff. Next slide. This is the girl I brought to the Peru in the Amazon. Next slide. That's the head anchor for ABC News in Miami. And she goes out there. We're showing all this stuff. Next slide. So this all becomes documentaries. We've won 5 Emmy Awards doing these documentaries. Next slide. She gets to experience these things. Get to meet the people in Cusco. And, of course, then, next slide. Take her to Machu Picchu. Next slide. This is a girl, again, who had never been out of Florida. Never been out of Florida. And all of a sudden, because she did something positive for the environment, she's in Machu Picchu with a documentary about her. This is the greatest animal on the face of the planet, the harpy eagle. Most powerful bird of prey in the world. One of the projects I'm most proud of. Keep on going. We're going to go through this because, hold on, where am I at here? Oh, I'm probably like a half an hour or so. Oh, no. Oh, yeah, I got 5 minutes. 3 minutes. Okay, so this is the harpy eagle. See, when it has its crest down, it looks like an eagle, but it puts its crest up. Next slide. It looks, people think it's like an owl. Next slide. When it looks at you, it looks like an owl, right? Big forest eagle. Half again the size of a bald eagle. I went down to Panama, and I did a trip down there, and I said, oh, my gosh, we got to save this eagle. Nobody even knew what it was, and yet it's one of the strongholds in Panama, though it's very rare. Keep on going. Talons the size of grizzly bear claws. How can we save this eagle? How do we make people know about this incredible rainforest? Next slide. Okay, this is the single greatest moment of my life as far as wildlife goes, and I've done a lot of cool things. I've gone diving with white sharks. I've gone tracking polar bears. I've tracked tigers. This, climbing 120 feet up into the tree and sitting in the nest with a harpy eagle. At the time I did it, it was one of only a handful that ever did it. Next slide. Long time ago. But man, you know what a dream that was? These are moments you can't take these away. This is what travel does, at least the kind of travel I'm talking about. These nature places. Folks, all the money in the world. Once this is gone, all the money in the world can't buy it back. We've got to protect this stuff. Next slide. Working with this bird, putting a transmitter on it, releasing it back in the wild. Next slide. Next slide. They're doing all the data, doing all the research, and including people in this work. Okay, including them. Next slide. And then letting it go. Next slide. Boom, let it go again. So it's got the transmitter on its back, and we track it. We watch it raise its chick up there, and we hook that up to a computer so kids at school can watch that eagle anywhere in the world. Watch where it is in the wild. Keep on going. Meeting with the indigenous people. Again, I go to these places initially for wildlife. I go back because of the people. It's the people, the culture, that's the magnet. That's what connects you. These people are incredible. This guy is 82 years old. You know what really ticks me off about these indigenous folks? They never lose their hair. Never. They don't have a flipping hair on their body, but their head has got all this hair that they never lose. Next slide. And they look at me as a freak because they're not very tall people. So when I walk into the forest, they're like, oh, my God, look at this guy. He's a monster. So I get attention that way. I don't care if they think I'm a freak, but they love me. So we talk. Next slide. This is the first time I went and I met with this particular tribe in Panama. And the great thing about working and keeping following up, building, developing those relationships, which is what you have to do. You need to develop relationships with your destinations so you become familiar with those folks. That's the shot I took then. This is a shot 15 years later. The same tribe. Okay. You know what's really great? Next slide. That's that little girl I took a photograph on my first shot. Here she is 15 years later. First girl on the right, on the far left as you're looking. That's her. You watch these people grow up. You develop these relationships. Folks, again, you cannot put enough value on what that does for your life, the feeling that you get inside. Next slide. Watching them dance, watching the cultural stuff. It's not just about the animals. They're not separated. They have to be together if it's going to work. Next slide. If we don't protect the people who live with these animals day by day and show them the value of why they need to protect these animals, it's not going to work. Next slide. So this is the beauty, connecting with the people, doing what they do. Next slide. Folks, I'm sorry about the technical glitches. I cannot stress enough what an important job you do. Again, you guys are dream makers. You make these dreams come true. You make people excited about the things that we have. My favorite saying in the world is, life is not measured by the number of breaths that you take. It's measured by the number of times your breath is taken away. And you want to have those breathtaking moments. Those are the things you want to create for your clients. Those memories that will define their lives. On the same note, we haven't inherited this earth from our parents. We are borrowing it from our children. We owe them to protect these areas, these incredible areas, whether they be cultural, whether they be natural, whatever it is. These are the things we got to protect so you guys can meet here year after year after year for decades to come and still have these beautiful places to send people to. I cannot thank you enough for what you do. I cannot thank you enough for what people in your administration, your group have done for me. I was a kid who could never have afforded to do these things. The door was open for me. It opened the world to me. I wouldn't trade it for anything. You couldn't pay me millions of dollars to take away all those experiences. Keep making those dreams come true. Good luck in your conference. Again, I apologize for the glitches. I'm happy to talk to anyone afterwards. Right at 20 minutes, I'm done.
Thank you. Wonderful talk, Ryan. We're all awake now. We're ready for the evening. Okay, we're just ready.
Well, I don't know. The town crier was pretty good.
Well, he's waiting for us right there. Okay. I wanted to thank Destination Canada for bringing Ron here. They're actually in the exhibit hall in tabletop number 26. And you see some evaluations on the chairs. If you can grab them, they're really easy to fill out. You'll be seeing them every day, so please do try to fill them out. We'll get some feedback. And with that, I'd like to invite your courageous leader here, my colleague in arms, Carol Erickson, who's the conference director. And she has a few notes for you, but we're really going to be moving on, so she'll be very short.
Thanks, Mara, and welcome. Do you feel inspired? I think so. Well, let me tell you, the fun is just about to begin. And when you leave, the town crier is going to take you to the bazaar where we have people who are hosting libations. And you will begin the libations and enjoy networking with your old friends, make new. And we're going to hand you this card so that you'll know which tables to go to get your libations. Now, when we're finished with that, our honorable town crier once again is going to open that door, and don't you go to your room, because the Bermuda Tourism Authority has prepared dinner, dancing, entertainment, great food, and conversation. So the evening is young. Let's get started. Mr. Town Crier.